Hello and welcome to the RPG Academy podcast. My name is Michael, and I'm here tonight with two of my favorite people in the world to have a special bonus show and tell episode about their recent experiences as DMs on a D&D TTRPG IP separated legally cruise called the D20 Cruise. Welcome to the show, Rich Howard and Neil Powell. Hopefully you're already familiar, but Rich Howard, of course, is a podcast host. He is a DM for hire. He's a game designer and more. He can be heard weekly on the Whelmed, the YJ Files podcast. And of course, producer Neil is a podcast producer, host of the Dungeon Masters Black podcast, and Man About Town.
So on today's episode of Smallville, I'm just so clear. It's going to take me a second to shift into talking about this.
Well, let's just start right at the top. What we think of the new costume that we had just this couple days ago, James Gunn released the new Superman costume reveal.
Rich has not even seen it.
Neil, have you seen it?
I'm going to look at it. I'm going to look at it right now.
All right. So Neil, what are your thoughts on the costume reveal?
I enjoyed it, but I realize where my expectations were for the movie based on just what information I had, because isn't the title of the movie Smallville?
It was originally Superman Legacy. And I believe now it has been turned to just Superman.
Okay. So in my head, I thought there was going to be more of him like in Smallville leading into becoming Superman. I did feel that he would be Superman in the movie, and I would get to see that certainly, because we need an on-ramp, and we need a fast on-ramp. So then, like, the first scene being, like, basically in Metropolis in the suit, I was like, hey, wait a minute. What? Okay, go double-check your expectations. Unlike the rest of the internet, Neil, go double-check your expectations before having any opinions. So I think it looks great, but at the same time, I was like, this is not what I was expecting at all.
Yeah. It's All-Star Superman, yeah? That's the All-Star Superman S?
Similar, my understanding, but there are some different... It's like sort of a combination. Like, the Shield is actually more like 50s era serial short, that S design.
Oh,
But it does have the trunks and the boots, I think, is very similar to All-Star Superman. But okay. I'm not an expert of Superman costumes.
I mean, I don't hate it. I have to tell you, my expectations are extremely low, and so I think it's fine. It's not anything too shocking or out of left field.
Right.
I still have no idea what to expect from James Gunn running the show, so I'm just going to withhold any observations until I maybe see something. Okay. I don't know. But I'm
completely fair. I will say, in Gunn, I trust. I'm currently all on board. I think it's going to be amazing. But we're not here today to talk about Smallville or Superman. We're here to talk about D&D, and specifically in this program you were both part of. So you were basically brought on as professional DMs. You were game runners for the D20 cruise, which was it a 3-day cruise out of...
Five-day cruise.
Well, technically, it was a 6-day, 5-night cruise.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that last day, all you do is get off the boat. I mean, I've been on cruises
before. So there's the first day on, last day off, and then, you know, we got the other 4 days. So we had three. You were right, though, that we did run games for 3 days. We were scheduled to run games for 3 days, and then the last day that you make that run back home again, where you're just at sea that whole day, we technically had off, though Neil did not.
Oh,
and we'll talk about that.
I have a bunch of questions, and this may be the most scattershot episode I've ever done, which for me is saying a lot, because I have a lot of questions, but I haven't really had a chance to like format them.
Sure.
So I'm just going to be asking you a bunch of big, broad questions. So my first is, how did you get approached to be the DMs for this? Like, I'm friendly with lots of folks who, you know, DM on Start Playing or have Patreons, like people who are quote unquote professional DMs. If someone else wants to do this, can you apply? Were you picked by person? Did you know a guy who knew a guy who knew a girl who knew a person?
A little bit of everything. Start with you, Neil. You start.
Yeah. So this is the second year that they've done it, and I was a part of the first year. But also to say that this is not in saying that, that was not the first cruise event that they had put on. They also put on a fairly large one called Gakukan, which is more geared towards cosplay and things like that. I know they are also like playing with the idea of doing potentially like a Warhammer 40,000 one. So that is all to say that when they started doing D&D, it was not the first adventure on sea that they had ever had. So I know the GM Tim very well. I've known him for I looked at the calendar and an uncomfortable number of years after doing the quick math. But he had referenced me because when they did the first year, they were initially looking at people closer to LA to kind of cut down on costs because that's where our port was last year. And so for me, I drove. I didn't need flight. I didn't need anything. I literally just drove, parked my vehicle right there at the dock, and then just got on the boat and went from there. So like that was kind of one of the things for me being involved was Tim, saying, hey, you should check this out. I still applied after and then got approved and then I was on. And so in the second year, them wanting to get bigger is at which point I told Rich to apply and then basically say I am the one referencing him as a person applying.
And they had, so this year was my first year on. And so I applied and I didn't know if I was going to make it, but I did have Neil as a reference, and I'm sure that didn't hurt.
It didn't.
But I think really was like when they were interviewing me, and I was like, I literally teach marine science through gaming. So this is a thing that I do, and, I've been running games for 45 years. So they told me that during the interview that they had, I think they had two rounds of hiring, I think, and they had 200 people apply for the first round. And so I was like, oh, that's a lot. That's a lot of people. So we'll see how it goes. But they ended up hiring me on. I do 3D printing now, and so I already told them what I was planning on doing. Having my players make personalized characters ahead of time that I could bring, or my pre-gens would all be, 3D printed, and they'd be able to go home with a set of dice that I was going to bring, and a personalized 3D mini that they could go home with. And they have Duff.
Mm-hmm. Impending Duff,
who's a pro painter on the ship as well. So he was doing pro painting seminars. So that was kind of a bonus. A couple of my players got their minis on the first day and then went and started painting them on the ship, which is pretty cool. Okay. So that's kind of how it worked, was by reference and then doing my best on my interview,
So as far as, because I'm someone who's been very fortunate and privileged to have taken multiple cruises as an adult. Did you have the entire boat? Was this entire boat dedicated to D20, or were you a subset in a otherwise cruise and a bunch of people were like, what the F's going on?
Yes, second one.
Okay.
Much more. Okay. This is a fun story. Maybe I didn't even tell you about this. So that's an even more fun version from last year. So basically, the last ship we were on and this ship, let's just rough math, say 3,500 guests. We represent roughly 200 of those on the overall ship. Last year, though, in the Facebook group for the cruise, people figured out that there was a D&D group, and it was this whole thing, I guess, in the Facebook chat, like blah blah blah, and I mean, which is so funny to me because in essence we only represent less than 10% of the guest population on the cruise itself. So, but now that said, the conference center at the bottom of the ship, that is ours. There are like
our the basement. Open, they put us in the basement.
Yes.
No one. I didn't know ships had a basement.
It does.
Basically, it does. It. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's. So you also have to think that like there are also times that we are taking spaces over for our event, just like anyone else would do with any other event they have. So our opening ceremony, there's a large bar lounge that we take over, and for our closing ceremonies as well, a huge portion of the dining hall we're taking over just when we show up because there's 200 of us all a part of the same group. But that's one of the intrinsic benefits I always feel like is that if someone goes, let's say you go, you only have like a 3 to 4 hour solid commitment to Dungeons and Dragons. There will be many other things a part of the convention, conference, whatever you want to say, to do. But if you only wanted to do that and then wanted to just cruise adventure the rest of the time, you could, because there are many people that are, like, their whole family comes, and then they come, they play their game, and then they're gone doing whatever they want with their family, excursions, whatever. So, yeah, the breakpoint for getting your own ship is absurd.
It is a goal that they were saying. I mean, eventually they would love to get, like, a whole ship, but I think the, what was the smallest ship we looked up? 600, 700 people?
Yeah.
600 people, but it's still like a $2 million non-refundable deposit.
Oh. I mean, I'm trying to get a catacomb to 1,000 people, so
Yeah, well, but at that point, everything's about that. I mean, you've chartered a ship to go where you want, when you want, why you want. I don't know that, like, if it were me, I don't know that I would ever think it should go that way. I'm not in charge, so it doesn't matter. But my opinion is no, only because then, like, you know, both our wives and kids can go and just experience the cruise, as it were, while I'm even running games. Or, you know, your wife and kids could go if you were a guest, or, you know, your whole family's there, or your whole group is there, and you have extra people, and they're not put out really when you're gone, because there are so many other things to do on the ship the entire time.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah.
So from a customer, I'm going to use customer just because it helps me keep my head straight. So people who came to play in these games, they signed up for the cruise to play in the games. From their standpoint, was everything included, like a normal cruise, basically, other than like alcohol? And even those, they have alcohol packages, but did they have to pay extra if they wanted to go to the painting seminars, because you brought that up? Or was it like all inclusive? Once you're in, you're in.
So there's two separate tickets. So you buy your ticket for the cruise normally. So people who had discounts or go on cruises and have whatever.
Points,
so you got
whatever.
Your points and whatever. You can buy your cruise tickets separately. And then the event ticket was separate from that. And the event ticket, so the cruise is just like a normal cruise, right? You're going on the cruise, and then also, by the way, on the cruise, there's also this gaming convention. And so the ticket for the gaming convention, it's what they call like a premier ticket now. I think next year they're going to do like a what they call a regular ticket and a premier ticket. So what they've done the last 2 years is what they are now calling premier, which is you get a pro DM, you get a three-hour game 3 days in a row. So we had the day that we shipped out, and then that night we had a big group meeting. We had a big meeting where you can kind of have a session zero. They had a Discord channel. Luckily for me, I had all my players on the Discord channel, so we did all our character generation at the beginning. I got to get them all the PDFs and information and stuff, because I, you know, if people know me, I did an entirely aquatic civilization style game.
Sure.
Yeah, so I did everything underwater, which is new even for the people who have been playing for a long time. They don't typically get that, so they were really interested in that. So that was really good. So you had the Discord channel, but there are people who don't Discord, you know, or whatever beforehand. So you had a session zero that first night with meet and greet. And then the next 3 days, you have a three-hour session. So as the DMs, I had a morning group an early day group, I guess. It was, for me, it was from 1 to 4. And then I had a break. And then I had 8:30 to 11:30, something like that. So two separate groups, 3 hours a day. So you get 9 hours worth of kind of campaign, basically.
Okay.
And Neil and GM Tim, the DM Tim, we'll tell you about what they did. That was wild and amazing. But so that was kind of that. But so like when my afternoon group ran their game, they just had their 3 hour D&D game. But there were other guests who were running. They were just threw up a thing on the Discord channel like, hey, I want to run this Adventures League similar module, or I want to do this, I want to do that. Again, the painting seminars, there was some, you know, some cosplay stuff. There was an introduction to LARPing. You know, it was like a con. They had a lot of other things you could go to if you wanted to.
Right. That was one of my other questions is, were there like pickup games? Were there games that were not D&D? If someone wanted to run Action 12 Cinema, could that have happened?
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to run a Descent to Midnight on Wednesday, a pickup game, because some of the new DMs that I met were really interested. But my laptop died, and so I couldn't print up the stuff, so I couldn't do it. But yeah, and then they also have a game library like you guys do at Catacomb. Yeah, and so they had, it wasn't huge, but I mean, they were coming on a ship, so you can only bring so much stuff. And
yeah,
I have so many things, so many compliments to say about the people who run the ship. We could talk about that later. But they were teaching games and other stuff there, so it was really fun.
Yeah, they have, and they're based out of the Florida area. That's probably why, I mean, consistently, I would wager that they'll kind of go out of that area because then they have more access to their stuff to more easily bring it on. Because, you know, it was just totes and totes and totes of.
When they were in LA, anything. They had to ship everything. Uh-huh. And in Florida, it was still a long drive, but they could drive everything down. So, yeah, that was kind of the deal. So.
Yeah, I mean, in full transparency, like in that model, 12 people are paying for me to be there because I'm the pro DM running mm-hmm. a game right. for them. And so for me, like my sessions were 10 to 1 and then 5 to 8. And so what they did differently this year is because last year we were just in the conference center. It's wild loud because a lot of the times you go to a convention, the ceilings are like 30 feet high. These are 8 and probably a small 8. Oh. And so everything is just... Yeah. And I had a person who had, like, I wouldn't say necessarily probably a severe hearing issue, but enough.
I mean, I have yeah. hearing issues, so I'm same. Cognizant of it.
Yeah, so yeah. I basically checked in with her, and I said, okay, which is basically your better ear? I need you to sit then next to me with that to me so I can yep. do the best that I
That's
can.
That's exactly what I do at conventions. Yeah. I get there early, and I sit where I need to.
Yep. So we had junior suites this year instead, where basically you had the suite, and you played your game basically in a private room.
Oh, that's very cool.
Which, I mean, it gets a little cramped and it gets a little hot, but welcome to being on a boat in the tropics. So, like, there's only so, you know, only yeah, so much,
seriously.
There's only so much yeah. you can do.
Yeah.
Space is obviously used up limited, as much as possible. Yeah. And again, we're heading towards the equator. Like, the variance on a day would literally be, like, 3 to 5 degrees from the coolest to the hottest point at the day.
Yeah.
But I think the transition to that was amazing in comparison.
So I played my first day. I played in the junior suites. One of my players was like, "Are you going to play like sound effects or anything?" And I was like, "I brought them. I could, but I just leaned back and then slid open the balcony door, and you could just hear the waves and the boat ocean. Go by. Yeah, I go out, and I'm like, there we go. We're good."
Yeah.
All right. So that was, again, that kind of leads me into my next question. So again, this is a pro DM experience. And I mean, if you've been on social media at all, there's all kinds of people are ingrained one side on the other on if pro DM and should exist or not. But usually the people who are like pro DMs, it's because those folks are exceptionally well, they're just good at it. And they often bring a little extra to the table, like sound effects, 3D terrain, custom minis, you know, the things that you may not get at your home game. So as professional DMs, what were you required to do and what sort of freedoms did you have? Like, did you have a specific campaign you had to run or did you make up your own? Like, tell me all that, how that looked from the side of what you were able or had to do.
Let me talk first because I want to talk about the nonsense that you and GM Tim pulled off because that was wild. So I ran, like I said, a fully aquatic game, and it's a scenario I wrote years ago that I ran a couple times at cons and for a podcast. Who did I run? Oh, Don't Split the Podcast Network, James and Tricasso's old podcast network. I ran it there. So I had adapted it. It was a one-shot. I adapted it and expanded it out for the 3 days. And then my friends at Tribality, where I used to have my columns, they just released The Seas of Adari and Under the Seas of Adari. They had just released. That thing is gorgeous. Like the campaign setting of note for underwater, full underwater campaign setting stuff. It is gorgeous. So I talked to Sean Ellsworth, who's the lead designer there, and he sent me like the PDF of their Heroes Guide and all that stuff that I had available to my players. I have my own house rules that I use and stuff that I had on a Google Drive so that they knew exactly what I was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked out really, really well. So I got to run entirely me. It's just 100%. This is me on a table, right? And we can talk about
that. Brings up some imagery I'd like to discuss later.
I wasn't part of the show, but we did have good show stuff too.
Okay.
So yeah, so I ended up, I think one of the DMs was like, Rich definitely like topped the bringing the most customized painted minis and terrain. So I was like, oh, did I overdo it? I don't know. Yeah. People are paying me to come onto a cruise and run a game. I'm bringing my A game, and everybody's A game's different. This is my A game, but individually, DMs could do whatever they wanted to do, and that freedom allowed people to really express themselves. One of the DMs was Blast and Astrid, who does incredible cosplay stuff and was literally like dressing up like the NPCs in her game sessions. It was just incredible. And then Neil and Tim decided they were going to parallel run and then bring their players together at the end for a 12-player epic. Why don't you talk about that, Neil?
Yeah, so last year we had done something similar, but we were like, we really showed the hand early with it in the sense that, like, they all started together in the same town and, like, the town was in peril. They're saving each other, basically using a layer action in the initiative order to kind of inform what each group is doing. And then they separate immediately, messing with both Tim and I, unbeknownst to each other. And then
this was last year?
That was last year, and then come together at the end. This year, nah, don't tell them. Let's have more fun. Straight up don't tell them that they're in the same group. So we start them off. We play our whole day one. They have their adventure. Tim and I are rooming together so that we can kind of really do a debrief about what has happened in those two rooms with those two groups. Because on day two, another thing is there's a professional NPC. It's Bonnie from the Library Bards. She's there to just, like, if you can tell her kind of what you want, she'll come in, she'll do a voice, she'll play up that character. And then, so it's a little bit of a, you know, that added, again, they're paying for the whole thing. So that additive experience.
She basically comes in and LARPs this NPC. Well, except for one DM this year, she LARPed an entire town.
Yes.
It was a whole town.
She was just every NPC in the town was her.
Every NPC was her. Yeah. And she just went from one character to the other. It was brilliant.
So day two, she comes in. We have it all set up. She talks to them. I say, okay, hold on, guys, real quick. I need to take Bonnie to help her guide her to the next room. I also have something to drop off. I'll be right back. Bold-faced lie. Just straight up lying to them. Because what they don't know is I'm taking her to Tim's room where she enters and I wait on the outside of the door while Tim goes back to my room and starts being their DM. Because basically both groups go to, for this story anyways, they go to the same location twice, but after each other.
Yeah, so he's like already... So the first day, one group goes to like a volcano. The other one goes to a mage's tower.
Yep.
So in the second day, the other group goes to the tower and the other group goes to the volcano. And they're seeing the results, like hearing the players just talk about like when they finally met together. Like, the players figured out what was going on. They met together. I was listening to them, and they were like, did one of you guys go running up a wall? Who broke that thing? Did you guys break that thing in that room that was so confusing to us? And they were, like, talking to each other about what each other had done in the other game. It was so good.
But it was awesome. The realization that I can't tell Tim enough information for him to really know what the last group did in the Mage Tower. In the same way, he cannot tell me enough information to really know what the last group did in the volcano. So my suggestion was like, well, forget it. I'll just run the Mage Tower twice. You run the volcano twice and we call it good. So at that point, obviously, our hand has been shown.
Oh, yeah.
To the point where we also tell them, like, you've got this figured out. You should probably go find the other group because I'm sure they have more information about what's going on.
At which point... they posted on the public board a bounty. It was the bounty of... So on the ship, the crews, people who run the crews, they do like a scavenger hunt every day, and that you can go get pictures to doing things and events and sign up for things. They'll give you these gold coins. It's a whole thing. And so they put a bounty up and said 3 gold coins to whoever can tell us who are the players in DM Neil's group.
This is real. Our GMs are telling us, so we should. And then they gave... Then they gave their Discord.
Our DMs are talking, and so should we. Yeah, it was so great. It was so great. So we took pictures of it, and they ended up finding a bunch of people that people who told them who Neil's group was. And then that night, I ran into them because I'd already met a few of them. I ran into them in a little hallway in the conference area. So there was like 12 of them or whatever. It was 12, right? Mm-hmm. So it was 12 of them in the hallway, planning and plotting. What they were going to do, and they had figured out that on Wednesday, which the rest of us had off, what happens sometimes is that your players will want to go on some tours and stuff.
Yeah.
So I rescheduled one of my afternoon games so that my players in that game could go on some Mayan ruin tours and stuff.
Okay.
So one of their groups was going on tours on Tuesday, and so they they just said, hey, we're going to reschedule it to Wednesday. Then the other group didn't have tours, and they're like, we don't need to schedule on Wednesday. Why don't we just play right now? And then they finally figured out, oh, it's because we're all playing together in the same game. Gotcha. So on Wednesday, they just had this they took over one of the little conference rooms and had a 12-player epic finale, which I'm glad was on Wednesday because I actually got to see that. I didn't get to see the other game. So they did this twice. Because they had their morning games, and then they had their nighttime games. And so, was it your nighttime game went normal, and then it was your daytime afternoon game that?
Yeah,
was...
because where their excursion and based on their like actual play would have been like dead center of when they should have got off the boat and gotten back on. I mean, so like to speak to like, you know, speaking more to like that pro DM thing, like my mind is always of like, that's why I'm here. Like that is the only reason why I'm here. The 12 people paid for me to be here. I will always operate under that being the prime, my prime directive, if you will, in the sense that like last year when we docked in Cabo, you have to tender. So like you have to get on a little boat that takes you to the dock, at which point then you're like beholden to that system. I never got off the boat. I was like, I will not be the reason that these people cannot run their game. Yep. And the only time, well, really, I have a side quest every time because I'm from California. So like a lot of people that, you know, either grew up in Mexico, have family in Mexico, they make a lot of the tacos that I eat where I'm from. So when I'm there, I'm like, I'm getting tacos. And that's it. I will go off the boat. I will obtain tacos. I will eat them. And then I will return to the boat. Yeah, side quest complete. Like that's all I need from the whole get off the boat experience.
Yeah. Same. I didn't get off the boat at all either. I just stayed on for pretty much the same reason, to make sure that everything was prepped. When they were asking like, hey, is it okay if we like, we might be able to move this because we have a tour. I'm like, I will make that happen. Yeah. Right. And then we had people come up after, like when Neil was done, like, cause Neil and I had a lot of these philosophical conversations about what the heck is a pro DM and who are we in, you know, what we're calling ourselves, or the administration is calling us pro DMs, right? And the guests are calling us pro DMs. I don't know if I've ever actually called myself a pro DM. You kind of did at the beginning of this, and I think it's the first time outside of this cruise. Do I consider myself professional in quality? Like, yeah, I'm here to bring an experience to my players, whether it's around my table or it's at a con or anywhere else. But we had this philosophical conversation a lot. But it was interesting to me because Neil and I played in a lot of games together. You know, Michael, you and I have played together. We've heard each other play. We kind of know what that's like, particularly running for actual plays and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it was really interesting to have so many players like come up to Neil and I after our games and stuff and say, this one person came up to Neil and was like, I have never had a pro DM. I did not know what to expect. You guys were through the roof. Your timing, your pacing, like how you got 12 people to do a thing in 3 hours to complete this incredible storyline. Like even at the end of their game, Neil and Tim, it was an epic adventure and they had done something amazing. And so, you know, the goddess Mistara shows up and gives everybody a wish because they're like, you're never going to play these characters again. Right. Sure, we'll give you a wish, right? I sat and watched them. Every individual player, 12 players, came up with a wish for their character. That was pretty amazing in and of themselves. This is what the pro DM is. Neil and Tim took every single one of those wishes and turned them to 11. Like, they knew the players. They knew the characters. They knew what would make that even more of, like, this emotional punch and turned up that story and helped them interweave these wishes into each other. That's a pro DM. That's a DM who's there and bringing their A game. It was amazing to watch.
So again, so you kind of touched on, I just want to clarify a few things for my own edification. So again, so this was a small part of a larger cruise. So did you have people who didn't know what was going on, but they came up and like, hey, can I play? Were there some like pickup one shots with other cruise goers? Were there vendors? Like how much of an actual, this is a convention was there?
So there was one vendor. Well, then the vendor is tough. Obviously, it's tough enough to bring those the things that you already have. There was one vendor. There were none last year, and there was one this year. And I think they did pretty well. It seemed like they enjoyed the time that they had, and it seemed like it was lucrative enough for them to be there. Right. The pickup game thing, I can say with the utmost and complete confidence that if that were a thing that would be totally okay with Royal Caribbean, the people running the cruise would 100,000% do it. you're not really afforded that opportunity because you are starting to knock on the door of illegal number of people being in certain amount of spaces.
Oh, gotcha.
So like for the most part, it ends up being a fairly closed event in that regard.
Okay.
So there are people that come through and that are interested in kind of like, you'll get a one, two off kind of scenario. But for the most part, no, it is not open to the rest of the crews to just kind of stumble their way through.
We had a shocking number of people come up and go like,
oh, yeah.
Are you gaming? And it's like, yep, there's a cruise. There's a con going on. They're like, wait, what? And so ran into a guy in an elevator and I had one of the con shirts on. And he was just like, you played D&D? And I was like, currently, like literally on the ship. He was like,
very
what?
Actively. Yeah.
What? And I told him, I said, I'm one of the guest DMs for, you know, this cruise. And, you know, just come down to the second floor in the basement for where the main area is. And they can tell you all about it. And it was so good.
That's very cool. So as the pro DMs, what was it like from like the social aspect, or even just from the guest standpoint, but like, were you doing events? Like, did everyone go to lunch together? Did everybody have drinks at the bar? Did everybody go swimming together? Like, what was the cruising like in between the games or after the games?
So last year I heard that they kind of just let everybody, like, you get, when you go on a cruise, if you've been on a cruise, you usually get assigned to like a table in the dining area at night.
Yep.
And you can eat in a million places, but like the dining area is kind of nice because sometimes you're sitting with your family or you might be sitting with some interesting other people. Last year, they just kind of set everybody randomly. And then the DMs last year, thank goodness you guys, Neil, said, hey, you know what we kind of need? We kind of need the DMs to be sitting together so we can decompress and talk about our games and like brainstorm. And that's what they did this year. So I was sitting at a table with, I think there was 10 people at the table, I think, and there was 8 of them were DMs. And it was one of my favorite parts of the whole cruise was just knowing that I'm going to be able to sit down and I'm going to be able to talk to Jay and Artie and Astrid and Serenity about their games and what's going on and brainstorm and find out what they do in the world. And it was really good. And then, you know, there were times like afterwards we decompress, like we'd hit the hot tub sometimes at 10, 11 o'clock at night. A few of us just again to do the same thing, kind of decompress and talk about our games and stuff like that.
Yeah, and so like from my perspective, like, and I know myself personally, and it's why I probably, Tim and I especially spoke up about the thing, is like, I'm there to do the thing you're saying. I'm there to be a pro DM. So what I realized last year is that Tim and I had sat in like kind of the buffet cafeteria area for lunch, and he and I just sat there practically in silence. And I said, Tim, are you okay? He said, yes. Neil, are you okay? And I said, yes. And like, we just sat there because like, I didn't need to be on. But what I realized though is even like players would recognize us, and they weren't even my players or his players, and they would sit down and I'm turning it back on. I'm not going to not turn it back on.
Yeah.
Because that's,
we are the entertainment.
That,
you know what I mean?
That's the agreement.
Like that, we're a big part of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so then like, that was kind of what Tim and I brought up was like, you know, as long as there is the space that like, I can just do nothing if I need to, that's not also just my room. Yes, I can go sit in my room and do that. But like, I don't necessarily want to do that. So then they had, So then they made the dinner table be that. So it's either DMs or staff at those tables or all together to kind of allow you to have those conversations to decompress and things like that.
poor Jay had a player. One of his players was sitting right behind him at the table behind him. He's like, I can't talk about my game.
I was like, oh, shoot. Because we had a couple that were close enough. So like if we did too loud, then
yeah, if you got two boys.
Yeah.
So a couple questions I have left, and again, I'll have to give you kind of free rein to cover anything that just didn't come up naturally. But, you know, as someone who goes to a lot of conventions and who runs a convention, but also runs games at conventions, like I have given advice multiple times on this is how you run a convention game. Here's things you want to keep in mind. Or when you go to convention, you know, comfortable shoes, hydrate, you know, all those things like that. When you add the additional complications of that, you're on a boat at sea.
Yeah.
So this would be advice for anyone else who is thinking about doing this, who wants to maybe apply next year. And I'm sure if this continues to gain popularity, there'll be 1,000 options. There'll be other boats doing the same thing. What advice would you have for someone who's thinking about doing this?
Perhaps don't bring as many minis as I did.
Okay.
It was a good experience. I was fine. My challenge came because of my choice of airline And I was just overweight, and so getting there cost me an extra $80 just for my one way. Luckily, I managed to cut that down on the way back, and I didn't have to pay that, but that was an issue. And in this case, the people who run the show, they are, man. So when Neil told me about this cruise, I was like, oh, DMing on a cruise, that sounds fun. Also sounds complicated from a con standpoint. And Neil, what he couldn't talk about, he talked more about the people who run the con than he did about what happened on the boat. He was like, I don't even know what to tell you. Like, I've been to a lot of cons, but I don't think I've seen anyone run a first time, first year gaming con and do it so well with so much mm-hmm. grace and have so many smiles on their face. He just couldn't talk. He couldn't stop talking about, you know, the main guy who runs the whole show. He just kept smiling the whole time. And I was like, I got to meet this guy. And you're not wrong, Neil. That guy, I never once saw that guy. That guy's butt was in a chair doing everything for everybody when I went to sleep. I got up in the morning. I went down there. It's like 7:30 or 8 o'clock in the morning. He was in the same chair, the yep. same smile on his face. All those people do. So Fu and Frank and Marcel and that, all the people who are running this, they the energy is we want to make, when people come in and they have smiles on their faces, that is why we're doing this. We're not doing this for a whole bunch of money or anything else. But, and so I was like, okay, well, I got to meet these people. That's why I signed up and applied. And so when I, in relation to what you're saying, they brought tons of stuff for people to use, folding mats and miniatures and just all kinds of stuff that people could just not have, the DMs could not, didn't have to bring everything.
Right.
So, I mean, Neil, you ended up using some of the mats because you were like, oh, mm-hmm. actually, this is perfect for this mage tower. I'm going to yep. use this instead.
Right? Oh, yeah. My players totally thought I had a way better plan than I did.
is that always the case, though?
Oh, like 100%. All the time. But, like, I looked at the
maps. That's
the
a pro mats. DM right there.
Yeah. I looked at the maps, and I said, these work perfectly for the first layer and then the next layer. And then I was like, okay. As soon as they were done, I was like, go ahead and flip that over. And they're like, oh, he knows exactly what he's doing. It's like, well, I mean, some of it is just, like, sheer convenience. But that's what I said. And I will give flowers as they are due. Michael, you're the only other person I've seen do it like they do, in the sense that, like, for you, I know, and I'm saying this to echo it onto the staff of the cruise,
yes,
like, sure. For you, a catacomb is not about the clout. A catacomb is not about making a bunch of money. In a catacomb,
if it is
not,
I'm doing it wrong.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, there you go. So, but, like, yeah. It's about making sure that as many people as possible have the best time as yeah. possible.
Yeah,
and I say it that way because there are factors that we cannot factor in. It could be about the convention center. It could be about the cruise ship. It could be about the staff that you don't have any control over.
Yeah.
And that's what I guess that is what I will say, and not to be, like, overly negative to any one person, but that is what I would say first and foremost. Think about what these people putting this on can actually control.
Yeah.
And when you have something, and it runs so many gamuts, when you have something that you're potentially complaining about, are there any solutions that you can think of? And yeah. again, when bringing it up to the staff, is it anything that they have any control over whatsoever? Yep. Because there are certain aspects about a cruise ship that aren't fun for people. One right. of them is it moves a whole bunch. Yeah. So that's another thing to think about. Like, if it's your first year, how good are you on a cruise? Because for me, last year was the first cruise I had ever been on. So I did a lot to prep in, like, what I could think of to be not feel bad or feel right. sick or all
the seasickness is a thing. People take yeah. the Dramamine patches or whatever.
One of the yeah. DMs last year got taken out by mm-hmm. seasickness.
Like assassin. No,
a yeah. couple of days. Yeah,
high seas, man.
High seas.
Pirates.
Death. Oh, hey, I saw pirates last year. It was an entirely black yacht, and I was like, "Those are modern day pirates." There's no convincing me otherwise. And I did not look at the ship very long because I was like, "Nope, they might see me looking."
Well, so and feeding into what we're talking about, the people who run the show, like, so they did have a DM that unexpectedly just got really hammered by the motion sickness. Some allergy stuff came up. It was apparently really bad. But they had someone ready to go, stepping up to take over those games and get it done. This year, Frank, one of the guys, came up. He was like, hey, you know, I know I'm so sorry about this thing with the keys and the junior suites or whatever. And I just looked at him And I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, I think I heard that there was a problem. Dude, the problem was solved before I even knew there was a problem.
Right.
So, like, you know, you're asking us to give you feedback. And we did. We gave them some feedback. But I don't – for them, they're just so want to make it perfect that their bar is so high, right, that they are going to try to do everything that they can to make this the best experience possible for the guests and for the DMs. Absolutely. Like, they bent over backwards for us when we needed it. And I was like, God, you guys are great. Don't stress. We're good. You know,
that is, you know, as someone who does run a convention and done for long for several years now, and the only way it works is volunteers. And again, you mentioned Drew. I'm sure absolutely is the head person whom everything flows from them. But if they didn't have people around them that were absolutely doing everything they could,
it
wouldn't work. So it is a team effort. But that is like one of the true joys as someone runs a convention, when someone comes to you and says, we had a problem, but I fixed it. Let me tell you what happened so that you know. Like, there's nothing better than that. It's almost better than not even having a problem at all. But when someone can tell you, you had a problem, but I've already solved it for you, but I just want to fill you in. That is just like perfection for what you want as someone who organizes things.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, because like, yeah, it was a shared space. So like the example is it's a shared space. So initially we were handing one key back and forth between two DMs. Like,
gotcha.
So I took my, like, basically shift one. Someone would take two. I was three. They were four. So you're having to hand it back and forth. And like, it was fine.
It was fine. Like, I didn't have any issues with it. And then they were like,
not ideal, but also not like awful.
But then they're like, you know what? I'll solve this problem. We'll just go get them to print more ticket or more.
Yeah. More keys.
And they were like, all right, problem solved. Yeah. And I was like,
problem
cool.
Solved.
Okay, great. And it wasn't really even a problem in the first place because we were just happy. The DMs were like happy to just communicate and do the job. Yeah. I'm like, dude, I'm on a cruise. What am I complaining?
Exactly. Yeah. Same question from the other side. If someone is listening to this and they're like, holy, that sounds amazing. I love going on cruises. If I can work it out where I can go on a cruise that just also happens to be this, what advice would you have for someone who's thinking about this? Considerations, advice, tips, tricks, anything you'd want to share with someone who's thinking about doing it?
Well, yeah, one of the things that, like, Rich pointed out that I think is really beneficial is that you are buying two different things. You know, you can certainly package them all together through the website and everything like that. But at the end of the day, you are buying a cruise and you are buying an event ticket. So there's a couple that goes on cruises all the time. They bought their ticket for next year's cruise while on the cruise to get the biggest, deepest discount that they possibly could. And then once the event tickets are all established, they'll buy the event ticket on top of the cruise ticket that they already bought while they were still on this cruise. So that's to say, like, if there are many ways that you can get onto the cruise, and like there are different ways that you can save money, certainly. So like, look at what works best for you.
I mean, just on that same note, then I have something else to say. Like, there's also, you can use all the DMs got affiliate codes. So when you do buy an event ticket, the reason why I pointed out that the cruise ticket is separate is because, you know, whatever discount you can get on that cruise, do it, right? Buy that cruise however you can do it. But the event ticket, if you use the affiliate code for one of the DMs on there, so like Neil's is Neil Powell DM and mine's
mine's just Neil DM.
Oh, Neil DM, and mine's Rich Howard DM. But it gets you, like, right now it gets you like $100 off the event ticket, and I think later on it'll get you $50 off the event ticket. Like, but it says like can't be used with other discounts, but what they mean is on that event, not on the cruise. Like, that's why they're two separate things. So I saw people wheeling and dealing and doing the same thing Neil's talking about. But as far as being a guest is concerned too, one of the things that really helped me that was more of a challenge for the other DMs was when the people who are running the show say, look, we have a Discord channel so that you can come on and have a conversation, right? Or please include an email so that we can get you information ahead of time. Please try and do that, because the fact that I had everybody I was going to play with on that Discord channel ahead of time, we had like 2 months or something, 6 weeks of prep time ahead of time. They got to design their own characters, since I had pre-gens I was going to bring, but I think 8 out of the 12 of my players all made their own characters with the material. They bought the material from Tribality as well, which was great. They're like, this is great setting. I'm going to go buy the stuff. I'm going to read through it. and they got to design their own minis and all that kind of stuff. Talking to the DM ahead of time because is great, because the DMs, a lot of the DMs, I had something specific I was going to run, but there were so many DMs that were like, look, I got a political game, I got a horror game, and I got a this game, and I got which, what are you guys in the mood for? And having that conversation ahead of time so that DM can just bring what they need to the game, or to let the people like Drew and them know, like, hey, do you happen to have maps that have X, Y, or Z on it? Can you bring those for me so I don't have to pack it? Huge help ahead of time. So keeping communication up ahead of time was really big.
I have a Call of Cthulhu style game that happens on a boat. So if I ever get to be one, that's what I'll do.
Well, yeah, and I had a Zoom call with part of my group. I had a table of seven, which I only approved because they were a single group of people, all that knew each players, other previously. Yeah. And I made really sure because I was like, I think I've been a third wheel before. I don't know that I've ever been a seventh wheel. And like, what a terrible experience for that one person who doesn't know all their in jokes and things like that. But yeah, so I got on with them and like talked through magic items, talked through character builds, talked through whatever they wanted to talk about. Because it's like Rich said, I mean, for me, for the most part, like if you build a character, whatever. And please just let me know what weird magic item you picked. That's what I really want to know, because like that's more of the X factor. The numbers on your class are probably ironed out by somebody somewhere. The magic item is a wild X factor, and I want to know what you chose. That's fair. That's me as a DM.
I have a story. So watching Neil and Tim play, so the DM Tim is from Canada. So at one point in time in their game, one of the players said, hey, as a reaction, can I activate my blah, blah, blah item? I didn't even hear the name of it. And you could see Tim look at him and go, yes, I don't know what that does. I ask worriedly, what does that do? So the player says it keeps everything within a 15-foot radius at 95 degrees Fahrenheit. And there's like a beat pause. And then Tim turns to Neil and goes, is that hot? And then there's a beep pause from Neil because he's like, why are you asking me this? He's like, oh, Canada. Yeah, actually, that's kind of like a warm summer day. It's hot summer day, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. It was so funny.
Well, they were in an ice dragon. So he's like, you know, so that's where the players might.
No, they were literally inside an ice dragon. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah. Because 95 degrees is like, it'd be like warm to uncomfortable, but it's not like boiling.
No, that yeah, it was maybe an ice dragon. It was a very odd magic item, honestly, but it was such a funny story. And also the players were really great. So the DMs that I saw were all fantastic, but the players that came, like, they also brought their A game. There was a lot of forever DMs who don't get to play.
Yeah.
And they were really invested in helping out and making sure the story was flowing. That at least of my group, they were really good at, like, we were laughing and we're going off in the weeds for a minute. But as soon as I said, okay, guys, this is great, let's get back to the story, they were all like, yep, let's, you know, circle the wagons and let's do the thing.
I can imagine there's some self-selection happening that if someone's like, yes, I'm going to throw down, you know, let's conservatively a couple $1,000 for a cruise and conservatively, you know, 500 extra bucks. I'm making up numbers. You can correct me or not for this thing. You're probably not going to go unless you're really into D&D and it's kind of your thing.
But you know, what's funny is that Ginny, one of the DMs, she volunteered for all the new players. So she had, if I remember correctly, her two groups were entirely new people who had not played D&D before, which that blew my mind. That was their first experience.
Yeah. And Tim had several people that had never played in person, which that's a kind of a newer thing. Of course. Like you've gone through Start Playing, like, you know, we've mentioned before, you've gone through Start Playing, you found a group on Roll20, so on and so forth. And yeah, so there were several players of his who had never physically played Dungeons and Dragons. They had done so digitally and it seemed like a decent amount, but you had never had a truly in-person game. Like, I don't know, ballpark, you could do the whole cruise and be under $2,000.
Okay. Mm-hmm. For a single person, like,
so the cruise, so the cabin's two people.
Okay.
But if you're doing so two people, and that's usually 11 to 1200 for like an interior cruise cabin, and then I think if you get two event tickets, you get some discounts and you pile some stuff on it, you could have two people with full event tickets and the cabin for around 2000-ish plus minus.
Yeah, that ain't bad.
It's not as bad as you think, but if you don't live in Orlando, because that's where it goes out
travel.
You also have to travel on top of that and things like that. But still, like, that's $1,000 a person for a six day, 5 night cruise.
Because right. You're also on a cruise. That, you know,
yeah, never forget, on a cruise. You're always yeah. on a cruise ship. Yeah.
So I say, like, playing D&D in a castle, like, I've never been to one of those, but I've seen that as an option. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's kind of cool. I'm going to give the edge to a cruise because when I'm not DMing or not D&Ding at a castle, it's like, okay, it's cool. But if I'm on a cruise, that's extra. So we need a castle on a boat. We need a D&D in a castle on a cruise.
I like it.
That's a whole new, it's a whole new thing. I will say too, one of the things for DMs too, like, it was interesting because when you go to cons, you're usually running like 4 hour one shots. Mm-hmm. Or if you're doing a campaign, like, you get like 6, 7, 8 games for a campaign, even a short campaign. Three games was interesting. Three games, I was like, woof, what's my act one? What's my act two? What's my act three?
Yeah.
It's too long for a one shot, but it's too short for a whole long thing. So there was definitely, this was a unique kind of pacing experience for me that I ended up, I think, worked out for both of us pretty well. I mean, Neil can speak to it, but
I would say pacing would be my only actual fear, which also I'm not a minis and maps person, so I don't know how many people would be cool with, like, theater of the mind.
No, there was tons of theater of the mind, man. And some of them were theater of the mind with just like a simple map of a boat or whatever on there, and they were just have moving dice around. I definitely took it to a new level, but but other people, it's just, what is, they just want a good game, and they all delivered. All the DMs that I saw delivered fantastic games.
Pacing would be the one thing I would be a little worried about, doing a 3-session continuous story, because I've never done that. I would want to practice that with, like, my home group or something.
It did work nice for an act one, tough. Act two, act three kind of beats.
That's exactly how I would have structured it in my head. All right, so we're going kind of long, but I want to give you guys, so kind of like carte blanche, was there anything that you, like, you think is exciting or interesting or funny, just something you were hoping to share with me and none of my questions brought it out? Neil, to you first. Is anything else you'd want to share? I'll put links in the show notes to help people find this particular cruise in the future. But what would you like to share with folks before we sign off?
No, I think the biggest moment is certainly, like, what is, you know, what would I say is the thing that really stood out the most is, like, I've never in my entire everything had that many people so actively conspire against me, and I couldn't be filled with more joy. They were sitting for hours. Like, they literally, when they stepped to the table on that final day, had plans A through D, like, legitimate plans,
like good plans too.
Oh yeah. And so, and then, yeah, like you said, yes, anding on top of them to realize, really, really realize that their wish fulfillment is the most important thing from start to finish, to truly just have Mistra give them a gift at the end and then expound on those gifts and those wishes and make it exactly what they want it to be. Like, there's no better feeling than that. And it's also a really good way to wrap up that game. Like, you're not ending on, like, you killed it. No, so here's a wish. Where do your characters ride off into the sunset, basically? And so, those two moments are by far, like, what stand out for me.
For me in my game, what was really interesting to me was, after having been on so many podcasts and been with people who played a large range of games, I draw a lot of mechanics from my D&D out of other games. So I use link questions from PBTAs to really get characters linked together really quickly, those bond and relationship questions from PBTA. We had a moment where at the end of this act, in this act three, they have to disrupt a ritual. So the players got there, and one of the players said, "You know what? I really wish I had a bomb."
Well, yeah.
And I'm like, and everybody's like, yeah, yeah. And they kept talking. I was like, hold on. Let's just take a hot second and sit with this idea, right? Because two of the characters had been on surface ships in the past. I'm like, you know what gunpowder is. You've seen a barrel full of gunpowder. But, like, what can you do underwater? And if we can't figure this out, that's fine. We'll move on. But there's a fuel source that they can use that's underwater, called fire ice and some other stuff. So they're talking about that. But they spent a bunch of time starting to think about how they could get this bomb. And I said, everybody stop. Somebody spend an inspiration. Okay, I'll do it. Great. Congratulations. We're going blades in the dark. You know, like, heist. You've just spent a point. You have a bomb.
Yep.
You have it. Nobody's missing an arm. Nobody's dead. There's a bomb. Tell me how you got the bomb. And so they tell me how they got the bomb, and it was brilliant. It was this amazing story they put together. And then I decided, just to try to figure out, to roll some dice and figure out how powerful the bomb was, I said, who's got something they can use to roll this bomb? And they had no smithing tools, they had no alchemist kit, they had nothing. And then the bard kind of looks at me and goes,
maybe.
And I was like, I looked at him, I said, jack of all trades? And he's all, he's all, sure. I'm like, I'm in, I'm on board. And then I said, just pick a stat. I don't care what stat. Pick any stat and just tell me how you're going to use the stat to build the bomb. So I'm thinking intelligence. I'm thinking wisdom. I'm thinking dexterity.
Wrong.
So the bard goes off. He starts going, you know, I've not always been me. I've known people who've done some things, and we've did things together, and they weren't always good. And he's going off, and it's like a stand-up routine, and I am laughing my butt off. And I'm like, where are you going with this? And then I finally stopped, and I said, did you just convince me that a charisma check is what you need to do to build this bomb? And he was like, maybe. And I was like, I'm on board. I'm on board. So they built it. They built
it. Is like, I know a guy.
I know a guy. So the last scene, he's building the bomb. He's making the little things and he's building the bomb. And I thought he was going to say, everybody hold on. It's been a long time since I've done this. Instead, he says, hang on, everybody. It's been a long time since I watched a guy do this through a window. Oh, my God. It was so funny. I had just as much or more fun than my players at the table. They were amazing. It was so much fun.
That's when it really sings as a DM. That's why I don't mind being the forever DM, is that most of the time I'm having more fun than the players are.
So introducing my players to, like, hey, have you ever played this game? No. This is what this mechanic is from. Have you ever played this? No. This is what this mechanic is from. Hey, they love D&D also. So many other games, they do certain things better, right?
Yep.
You know, if I'm doing horror, I might pull out a Jenga tower. Who knows? Ooh. You know, horror D&D.
That would be great on a boat.
I brought it up before, too. I was like, yeah, dread on a boat.
That adds a whole new level.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Jim, thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for sharing. I mean, I am absolutely interested as both potentially doing this as a professional DM, but also just as someone who likes to go on cruises. But if I could maybe line it up and go as a player, that would be amazing as well. So I'm just excited to get to share this with you. I hope have you shared this with me, I should say, and our listeners. Where could people get a hold of you if they have specific questions or they just want to follow what you do in your other life, game design, podcasting, such? Rich, I'll start with you. Where can people find you on the internet? Where can they support you? All that kind of good stuff.
Well, I do technically have a Twitter account. I'm just not really on Twitter very much anymore. Most of the time I'm on Discord. So you can find me through the RPG Academy. If you're already on the Discord for the RPG Academy, I'm there. So you're welcome to just ping me there, which would probably be the most common place people here would find me. But also Whelm the Young Justice Files is my podcast. Neil's the producer. We have a Discord for that as well, and a Twitter for that. And Descent into Midnight, which is a Powered by the Apocalypse game that I co-designed with Richard Kurtzlandry and Taylor Labreche. We have a Discord for that as well. So you're welcome to find us anywhere on those Discord channels.
Fantastic. Neil.
Perfect. Well, I mean, I'd be remiss if I didn't say, if you go to event.cruises, that's where all the information about everything we've talked about is there. For GakuCon, for D20 Cruise, for any other cruise that they feel compelled to put on. That is your one-stop shop. Event.cruises. Like Rich Hour DM or Neil DM, both of those right now would get you $100 off your event ticket. Even their mentality of why that exists is, well, yeah, that's the marketing budget we would probably spend for a person to attend, but now we don't need to, so we want to immediately put that money back in the pockets of the people that are already going and supporting us. And I'm like, wild. What a novel idea that you had just had.
Yes, it's amazing.
Keeping folks and keeping happy folks is absolutely one of the best marketing strategies out there. Trying to expand quantumly.
It was a great experience, but the people who run the con are what are going to bring me back next year for sure.
Yep. Fantastic. And of course, the Dungeon Master's Block is a place where you come talk about the Dungeon Master. And recently I brought on Derek Saunders from How Not to DM. He kind of closed up shop on that interview style, and I brought him on to be a new co-host, which has been great, having somebody getting some new ideas in. And so if you want to come listen to what we do, we have way too much for you to listen to, but some people do it, and I think it's wild. Dungeon Master's Block on anywhere you would want to find us, we will most likely be there.
Fantastic. As for myself, again, most of what I can do can be found at the RPG Academy. I am most active in our Discord. I do have a Facebook as well. I don't do Twitter anymore. I recently started a TikTok. I've been having actually quite a lot of fun over there. So if you are on TikTok, want to find me, you can just search at the RPG Academy and it should find me. And we will sign off as we always do here by saying, if you're having fun,
you're doing it right.
Thanks. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.